Let's face it, most people aren't making massive turkey feasts on the regular. And after 364 days of not thinking about it, it can be hard to get that bird just right. That's where Instacart, the holiday rescue app, comes in. From getting all the ingredients to prep a full seasonal spread to getting last-minute swaps in a turkey emergency, Instacart has everything a holiday host needs to save face and save dinner. And right now, if you download Instacart, you'll get free delivery on your first three orders and delivery in as fast as 1 hour. Offer valid for a limited time. $10 minimum per order. Additional terms apply.
All righty, we continue. Hour number two of our radio program. That's right, it is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. We are inching closer and closer to Monday for the college football playoff to commence. We have Michigan and Alabama in the Rose Bowl, and then we will have the Sugar Bowl, of course, between Texas and Washington. And I was texting my buddy Roman Harper the other day, former NFL safety, played his college ball at Alabama, and I was like, I'm excited for Alabama and Michigan. And he was like, I'm more excited for Texas and Washington. And I'm like, oh, I think Alabama, Michigan's going to be a great game. And he's like, Zach, I know you like Michigan. I know you root for Michigan, but Alabama is going to kick the crap out of the Wolverines. So now joining us, former Alabama safety, now a part of the SEC network, the great Roman Harper. Roman, appreciate the time. How you been, my friend?
Zach, I'm good, man. First of all, that was a great picture of you and your little logo leading up to it that I was looking at. It's just a great picture of you, dude, just to let you know that. And I'm not saying Michigan, Alabama's going to cook the crap out of Michigan, but I do think they're going to win the game. And I'm still waiting on you to convince me how Michigan wins this game.
Well, you convince me first. Why are you so confident about the Alabama Crimson Tide and why they're going to take down Michigan?
Well, I'm going to take as much bias out as I can, and I just look at the teams for what they are. And I, you know, styles make fights. And when I watch Alabama, I think they have the advantage. So let's just look at how does each team go about winning the game? And so when I look at Michigan, Michigan is an undefeated conference champion that does what they do. That's what they've done all year long. Doesn't matter who they play, they are who they are. They haven't really changed personalities versus this team versus that team. So they're a run-first team that's going to use 21, 12 personnel, multiple tight ends, and they run the football, then they throw the football off of that. And mostly utilizing the tight ends as well, which is a great matchup versus most teams. Then I look on the other side, and I look at Alabama's defense, and I'm like, all right, well, Alabama's big. Nobody's just going to out-physical and push them around. I know Michigan's going to move gaps and cool guys and do some other things to make sure the gaps are moving and not just trying to bully Alabama, but they do like to play bully ball. And nobody really bullies Alabama since Nick Saban's been there. They're too big. They're too physical. That's just what he recruits. And then, okay, so you use two tight ends. You want to do some other things. Michigan has one receiver that's a threat, Roman Wilson, my favorite name in college football. And then, so he's a threat. They like to use him in different motion situations to get him open, get him off the line because he's not a very big guy. So they use motion to get him away from guys and then get him up the field in big explosive plays, come off of that. Outside of that, then they use tight ends like Loveland, that's it. And number 89, his name is slipping my name right now too. So these are the tight ends they use. And so Alabama – with Caleb Downs, they're going to use him in big nickel situations, put him in the box. They still have their coverage guys on the outside and Terrion Arnold and Kool-Aid McKinstry. Alabama loves that matchup. And the strength of Alabama's defense is the secondary piece. And so if you don't have the advantage where you can get big and still be able to run the ball and pass off of it, because now you have safeties that can cover, you also have the two corners on the outside that you love that matchup versus any receiver of Michigan, that's advantage Alabama. And so where do you get that advantage at? Okay, quarterback runs, but J.J. McCarthy's athletic. He's not Mike Vick. It's a difference. And so if they were able to handle Jaden Daniels in the same type of situations with a great rush plan, I think they have the same ability to be able to do that versus a Michigan team that J.J. McCarthy is not the same threat that Jaden Daniels is. So I'm looking at that. I'm like, okay, how's Michigan getting to 24 points? They have to get to 24 points some kind of way or another. And I think Alabama, with their explosiveness on offense, and all of you have to stop with Jalen Milroe. Michigan has not faced a quarterback like Jalen Milroe. I understand he has some deficiencies here and there, whatever you want to say. But Michigan has not spied a quarterback all year long. So now you got to implement some kind of spy game. And we saw Georgia do that for the first time, and it didn't work for Georgia as well either. So it's going to be really, really interesting to see how Michigan gets those 24 points or 24, 28 to 30 points to try and win this game versus Alabama. I know that Alabama will be able to score at some point. I just don't know how much because of the explosiveness of their offense and also their run, their quarterback.
Yes, so we have a different view on this game. Roman Harper is here with us. It's a great job, SEC Network. You said 24 points. It's funny. My final score for this game is Michigan 23, Alabama 20. And I think this is a physical, old-school style football game. And Blake Corum is the toughest running back in the country. Donovan Edwards will be good for one big explosive play that we're usually not accustomed to allowing to be able to see Nick Saban giving that up. And then you hit the nail on the head. McCarthy is going to be the difference in this game. And I say this full disclosure, I do not love J.J. McCarthy, but I think the best thing to happen to Michigan was last year, I'm screaming when it was Michigan TCU, use his legs, use his legs, use his legs. And they allowed him to be a little bit more mobile in the second half against TCU. Now, I know they're not going up against TCU. They're going up against Alabama. I get that. But I think they unleash McCarthy coming up on Monday, and they trust his legs early in the game, and I think that's going to make for a major difference.
Yeah, I think so. The thing I like about Corum is that he's a running back that kind of hits the hole with speed and power, right? Like, reminds me a lot of Mark Ingram. When Mark Ingram would hit the hole, he explodes through the hole with power, so they break a lot more arm tackles and things of that nature. But Michigan's O-line, without the guard, they've had an injury or two up front.
Yeah. It's not as good as the offensive line the last 2 years. You're right on that.
Right. I agree. I agree with that. So it's like, all right, so how do they get those explosive runs? Alabama, they're like, dude, we're going to put 8-9 guys in the box and dare you to beat us another way. And so, and you give Nick Saban a month to prepare. I just think a lot of these things are leaning towards Alabama's favor when I continue to rattle my brain about how do you go about winning this game? How do you go about winning this game? Now, the one thing that we cannot count on are turnovers. And if Michigan forces Alabama into mistakes and turnovers, all defensively or special teams, then Michigan sets themselves up to win this game. But if you do not do that, if this thing's all square and turnovers, that I don't think it bodes well for Michigan. That's just the matchup that I see. And you definitely do not want this to be any type of drop-back game because Michigan's O-line, the tackles, they look more like guards that are playing tackle, and that just is not a good matchup versus Dallas Turner or Chris Braswell, who we know can both really, really rush the passer efficiently. So I'm really interested and intrigued about the matchups and the unknown of Jim Harbaugh. I think the unknown of Jim Harbaugh is another thing that not enough people are going to talk about that I really look at, because I played against Jim Harbaugh when he was coaching the 49ers in the playoffs. He's always got a play or two, a wrinkle that nobody sees, nobody's ready for. So how do you stay disciplined enough to be ready and prepared for those things? So those big plays don't kill you and cost you. And so Alabama did a great job versus Georgia keeping everything in front of them, playing a lot more coverage, keeping two high safeties, playing a lot more combo coverages where every two receivers that you got, we got three defenders on them, okay? And so we win in that number, and then we're going to let our up front guys win in the run game. Stay disciplined in your gaps, because when I watch Michigan on tape, it's not like they're just blowing people off the ball. As much as they're so consistent with the run game, all they need is one guy to get out of a gap, and Blake Corum, Donovan Edwards hit that hole late, and then that's when they get their explosive play. So Alabama has to stay disciplined in their run gaps, and if they do that, they just make it so much harder on Michigan, because Michigan is not an explosive team outside of the run game and then a couple of deep shots down the field. So, but when you just look at them per player, Alabama is not afraid of Roman Wilson. They're not afraid of Colston Loveland. So that part of it, I think Alabama is a different sense of confidence, maybe quiet confidence. But I like the matchup if I'm Alabama. And I can't wait till you actually want to mention the other game as well. Though I know you're a Michigan guy.
Well, we'll get to that game in just a second. But you talk about a trick play. I'm telling you, there's going to be a second half orgy in this game with Alex Orgy. They've been using him the last few weeks. Run, run, run. He is going to have a big pass in this game and make his first completion of the season. Get ready for that second half orgy, Roman.
I would be shocked. But I wouldn't be shocked because this is exactly what I just said would happen, was that Harbaugh's going to do something that nobody's ready for. Because the moment Alex Orgy comes in, I'm going zero blitz. I'm eating up all the gaps, and I'm going to make him beat us some kind of some other way than just a quarterback power, which is all he's shown to be able to do, or that they've allowed him to do so far. That's not all he can do, but I'm sure. But that is what he does really well. He's a big quarterback, too, that runs downhill. So, but Alabama, man, they're just really big as well. So, and maybe we're all are becoming we're just so used to the last time we saw these teams, which was Michigan really struggling to put on an offensive showcase versus an Iowa team that's not very athletic, that I've never seen a defense run cover three so many times in one game and just never mix up any other look, and versus Michigan. And Michigan couldn't do anything about it because what Iowa did was they just got in their gaps and stayed there. And we didn't get out of our gaps. We all stayed in the place we were supposed to be at. And if you're disciplined enough to be boring and basic and just do that all day consistently enough, then you're going to give yourself a chance. Because the biggest thing is run the run game to stop the running game. It's all a numbers game. If I got eight guys, I got the advantage. Now, if you bring in the quarterback run game, then you got nine. So because you got an extra blocker. So then you got a little bit of extra problems. That's why you're saying J.J. McCarthy could be up. But if Michigan wants to all of a sudden do something completely different, I don't know most teams that are successful that way, that have been able to win 10 games, that are undefeated conference champion, that has reached the pinnacle, the number one team in the country, doing things one way, and then all of a sudden getting the biggest game of the year and do it a little bit or completely different. That's just really hard for everybody to wrap their heads around. But you do have a month to prepare. So it'll be interesting to see. I just don't see teams being successful that way. I haven't been around it.
Do you think, Roman Harper, this is the finest coaching job Nick Saban has done in his illustrious career at Alabama?
I don't know about that. I think the book is not written yet. It's not complete. Now, if they go on to win it, then probably so. You could possibly say that. But I think it just looks so different than what you're used to seeing. Alabama did not look good early in this season. This team has figured out who they are, what works for them. And that's what we should give Nick Saban more credit on, is that he's never just a stake in the ground. You know what I mean? He's not like, I'm just planting my flag here and this is who we are. This is what we're going to do. Doesn't matter what. He's always like, well, what works best with this team? What works best with this player? How can I give this player, add more value to him and his life on and off the field all the time? And so because he's never just a flag in the sand type guy, I think they're always evolving. They went from a run first team to a Lane Kiffin hurry up offense, spread the ball all around, throw it around the ballpark, to then go back to Derrick Henry toting the rock type offense, to then Bryce Young and Mac Jones throwing it all over the place, to now more of a run first, throwing the ball some, being more explosive and leaning on the defensive type team as well. So when you can win in multiple facets, that really shows how great of a coach you are, because not so much that you're so much smarter than everybody, but it's more like, it's not about me and ego. And that is not about just me and how we're going to do things, but just more about what's best for my team, and let's go do that.
Yeah, and I don't know if you will agree with this or not, but when he benched Milroe, and I said this at the time when he went back to him the next week, when he benched Milroe, I thought that was the first time going into that USF game that he actually heard, like, the outside criticism. I don't think he actually wanted to bench Milroe when he did it, but he felt as if he had to, and that's why he went back to him so quickly shortly after that.
Was that not like a Jedi mind trick? Is that like a parent just tricking their kid into, all right, you think you want this, but this is what you really need, okay? And so, all right, I'll give you this. You need it. And so that was the one really cool thing about that whole deal, was that I was actually a little nervous about it too, because I
Yeah, we're having trouble hearing Roman, obviously. He's driving around, so I think we just lost him for a second. I think we got him back, though. Roman, can you hear me all right? All righty. So I don't think we're able to reconnect with Roman Harper. If we get him back up, that'd be great. I just want to ask him one more question about Texas and Washington, but if we're not good to go, then that is all right. Good conversation with Roman Harper right there, who was joining us on CBS Sports Radio from the SEC Network as he gets set for Michigan and Alabama, and we also have Texas and Washington as well. We're just going to try to reconnect him. I still think he's actually up on the screen, but we're just having trouble hearing him. So Roman Harper's back. All right, let's wrap it up this way. Texas, Washington, what do you love about this matchup? I think it's a high-scoring affair. I think Washington pulls this game out late, but it wouldn't surprise me either way. I think this is like a 34-31 game, but I'm going Washington.
Man, I'm kind of with you. I'm going Washington as well. I think I haven't decided completely, but you know, Zach, I went through a valley right there, bro, over here. I'm about to go golf with my cousin. So, yeah. And so what really happened was that, so I like this Washington Texas matchup because I don't know. So everybody's been telling us that Texas is the better team. And when you look at a roster per person, like maybe Texas is better. Like Texas is back in that way. But when you look at where Texas is strong at, that D-line, like is their D-line really going to be that much of an advantage in this game? If it is not the biggest advantage that we think it's going to be or anticipated being, then Washington's going to win this game. And the thing that kind of takes away the advantage of Texas is they're so big and physical in the middle. But Washington doesn't run the ball in the middle. They pick the ball up. They throw it out fast to their wide receivers. They do a lot of screens. They get the ball out wide. And when they run the football, they do a lot of pin and pull runs, which is they bring a tight end in. They block down on the end. They pull a guard or a tackle. They get to the edges. So they're not really running downhill. They're always getting to the edges. So this team attacks you horizontally way more than they do vertically. And then off of that, they got some passes downfield. That, man, this guy, Michael Penix, can straight up throw it. I hate his throwing technique, but everybody's going to love on him just a little bit more naturally because he's a lefty. Everybody loves a left-handed quarterback. They just look different. They feel pretty. It's just the whole deal. But he's inaccurate at times. But these receivers of Washington are a problem. And Texas secondary is not the best as well. I hate the coverages that they play a lot of times just because as a safety, whenever you don't touch a slot receiver – and I look up and 12 yards down the field, it's always man-to-man coverage. I don't like that. So that's what Texas finds himself doing a lot of, and that's going to – Washington is going to try and take advantage of that. Also, doing a little bit of go-back film last year, a lot of these same players played in this game last year in this game, the Alamo Bowl. And Texas did not affect Michael Penix like they wanted to. Washington affected Quinn Ewers a lot more last year then Texas affected Michael Penix. And because of that, I think a lot of these simulators will rise. And I think I'm leaning towards Washington in an upset in this one.
All righty, Roman Harper, enjoy the travel. And we appreciate the time as always. Thanks so much for doing this and Happy New Year to you and your family.
Hey, man, Happy New Year's, man. Thanks, Zach, as always having me, man. Appreciate it, man. You know I'll be listening.
You got it. Thanks so much. There he is, Roman Harper, the great Roman Harper, joining us on CBS Sports Radio. All righty, we'll take a break. We'll come on back. We'll update you some of the biggest stories in the world of sports with some audio with the news brief. But first up, I was just about to toss it to an update, but that's not the case right now because we're not at 4:30 yet. I don't know. For some reason, I did this on the 6 to 10 show. Whenever I'm about to go to the news brief and tease the news brief, I always am about to toss it to an update. So maybe I have some of the announcer yips right there. But anyway, we'll come on back in 5 minutes. Zach Hill Show, CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, what's the number one reason you should try Instacart? Shopping over 1.5 million unique products from over 1,000 retailers and get everything delivered right to your door in as fast as 1 hour, all in one app. So you can spend more time with the ones who matter most. Visit instacart.com to get free delivery on your first 3 orders. Offer valid for a limited time. $10 minimum per order. Additional terms apply.
Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
You can stream the NFL and What's the One for free, sponsored by AutoZone all season long. You listen to every What's the One broadcast of the NFL live on the NFL app by asking Alexa to open What's the One Sports on the Odyssey app. Get in the zone, AutoZone. AutoZone's free battery testing and charging is available for free at your local AutoZone. Get in the zone, AutoZone. Restrictions apply. Alrighty, let's start off with Ja'Marr Chase. This was the audio we were talking about yesterday. Let's hear it in its entirety. This is Ja'Marr Chase when he was asked what's so special about the Chiefs' secondary.
If I'm being honest, nothing. They just know how to play us. They know the leverages. They know what splits we in. They just know what we going to do, certain movements. They throw a little double-doubles at us to stop the two best players on our side, and that's all they do. I mean, it's not really like they got a Jalen Ramsey on these squads, you know what I'm saying? So, not much.
So when you go back to the question of that, this has been thrown out on social media where it's, and I said this yesterday in the moment, I said I had to hear the question because you see the quote and it's like, oh man, that's really disrespectful to the entire defense. Like, nothing special about the Chiefs' defense. Look at their defensive line. Chris Jones is one of the best players, not only on the defense side of the ball, but in football, period. And the question was, what's so special about the Chiefs' secondary? That was the question. Do they do anything special? And I've seen a lot of people have put the quote out there as if the question was, oh, Ja'Marr Chase says there's nothing special about the Chiefs' defense. And I think that's a big difference and a big distinction between the two. Because, like, if you look at the Chiefs' secondary, L'Jarius needs the one player that really stands out to me. But I don't think there's anything special about the Chiefs' secondary. Now, if you said the entire defense, I think that would be an absurd answer. But I'm actually going to defend Ja'Marr Chase a little bit. Because if you go back and listen to the question once again, it wasn't about the entirety of the defense. It was about what makes the secondary special, but they do anything special, something along those lines, with the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, here's Ja'Marr Chase, and when he was asked if he enjoys trash-talking the Kansas City Chiefs, because this is not the first time.
Do you enjoy that back and forth? I mean, it seems to happen every single game you play.
Hell yeah. They talk the most, that's why. Yeah, I love it.
But you guys enjoy it. There's no hate? Or is there some hate between both sides?
No comment. No comment.
I don't know. Samter, you're a Chiefs fan, so you're definitely biased. A Fugazi Chiefs fan. I wish you guys could see the look that Manny just gave Samter. When I said, Samter, you're a Chiefs fan, Manny said, you are? Well, what the heck is going on? Because everyone knows Samter's actually a Jet fan, but he's become this Fugazi Chiefs fan because he's sick and tired of watching the JATS Jets. So maybe you're somewhat biased here. I actually think the Bengals do more trash-talking than Kansas City. Like, it wasn't the Kansas City Chiefs who trash-talked before that AFC title game. It started when Mike Hilton was on the sideline in Buffalo after smothering the Bills, where he was like, we're going to Burrowhead. I'm not saying the Chiefs don't talk smack. You know, Willie Gay talks smack. But I would say the Bengals talk more trash than the Kansas City Chiefs, Samter.
It seems like in the locker room they do. Although you never know what Travis Kelce is going to say on the New Heights podcast, mm-hmm. but maybe on the field. Maybe
yeah,
he's talking
point.
More like on the field kind of stuff. I don't know for sure, but I know the Chiefs do talk a lot of smack on the field, as I'm sure a lot of teams do. So maybe it's more the on-field trash talking.
And let's just call it what it is. These are two teams that have been two of the better teams in the NFL, not this year, but the two previous seasons. And they have met up in an AFC championship game. One went the Bengals' way. One went the Kansas City Chiefs way. But really, the Bengals have been that lone team that have been the kryptonite to Kansas City. And a lot of teams, I'm not saying this year, but for the last few years, they fear Kansas City. The Bengals don't fear Kansas City. And let me just remind everyone, there's no Joe Burrow in this game. He's done for the season. It's Jake Browning.
Burrow hit my ass!
All right, maybe they do talk some trash. But that was after the game, too, with Travis Kelce. So, if the Bengals win this one, I think it just shows you how the Chiefs are just not that good this year. Because Jake Browning going into Burrowhead, Arrowhead this weekend? Like, I have a tough time seeing the Bengals win, but then yet again, it's not like I have any trust in Kansas City right now. Their offense stinks right now. But you would think that Mahomes would be able to outscore Jake Browning. All righty, let's play one more from Ja'Marr Chase. What if the Chiefs uses his comments as some bulletin board material?
Body language is everything.
They can take it how they want to. I don't care. At the end of the day, it's so much that I can do myself. It's not like I'm Iron Man. I can't throw the football to myself. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a team sport. I know what I see on paper. I know what I see in game. That's why they double everybody, because they can't do it one-on-one. I'm not bugged about it. They know I'm good. They know how to play us. That's what it is, but it's not like they got a superstar on their defense.
Alrighty. I don't think that was what we were supposed to toss to, but we'll keep it moving here.
That
on
was
CBS.
The right clip, but it seemed like Manny's computer froze. So
we'll
go with technical difficulties on that one.
Okay.
But that was the correct clip.
Okay. Let's go to Dante Hall on Good Morning Football. His message to the Kansas City Chiefs.
Body language is everything. When you are screaming and yelling at your players, that permeates negatively. What you have had in the first 5 years, that poker face, we know we're going to win this in the end, that permeates positively. Get back to being positive. It's like my little kids running around here on Christmas Day. We've got you a Christmas tree full of presents, and you're acting like spoiled little brats. This is not a good look. I'm watching a game with my kids, and you're acting like that? Come on, guys. Be better, and I think the team would be better.
So I think he's sort of right, but then there's part of me that says, eh, I don't always agree. Like, sometimes you need your leader and the best player in football and Patrick Mahomes to lose his mind. But I thought the spot he did it in this year and the way that he did it was telling that he doesn't really have confidence in this group. And then that becomes a problem because then people question themselves even in the locker room. And, oh, are we all on the same page? Like, the spot he lost his mind was when Kadarius Toney lined up offside. And it cost them the Buffalo Bills game after the craziness of the Travis Kelce lateral to Toney, which was a touchdown, then was taken off the board. Him losing his mind wasn't really being irate at the officials. The officials got the call right. It was egregious how far offside Kadarius Toney was. But him freaking out was more so him knowing, man, we got a lot of problems. And then they continued it for a day, bitching and complaining about the refs when the refs were actually in the right. And I think you have some guys with some big egos in that locker room. Like, Kadarius Toney has a big ego, but he stinks on the field. Like, he is horrible. He's cost the Chiefs two games this year. The first game of the season, and then the Buffalo Bills game. So I'm not saying Mahomes is a bad leader, because I think the guy is a good leader. But his freak out was so clearly obvious about him basically, even though he didn't say this, knowing that they don't have the horses this year. And I think that just sends a vibe in the locker room where guys aren't stupid, and they kind of picked up on that as well. And if your receivers can't catch the ball, I don't care how good your quarterback is or how great your quarterback is, he can only throw it so many times. If the same result over and over again is drop, 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 you're not going to win many games in this league. And I think Kansas City has a lot, and I mean a lot of flaws, and they're going to be quickly in and then out of the postseason. Let's listen up to Robert Saleh last night. I guess some reporter wasn't thrilled with the way that Robert Saleh was conducting himself at the podium and wanted to see a little bit more anger from the coach of the New York Jets.
You don't seem, I mean, maybe you're not conveying what you really feel inside, but you don't seem like particularly like angry or upset about it. And I'm wondering if you could just share like what's really churning inside of you now.
I'm not quite sure on the question, Rich.
We don't seem like...
Do you want me to throw the podium on the floor?
Whatever you want to do.
It's weird because everyone says Robert Saleh is a likable guy, and I don't have a relationship with him, so maybe he is a likable guy when everyone says you're a likable guy. But sometimes the likable guy doesn't make for the best head coach. And I think the players walk too much over Robert Saleh. And not only that, man, how many times are you going to have too many men on the field? And how many times is your team going to jump offside and make a crucial penalty? Like, don't get me wrong. Their season was over 4 plays into the season when Aaron Rodgers went down. But the mental mistakes and the penalties, doesn't matter who your quarterback is, it's not a good reflection on the coach, and it's a team that is poorly disciplined. And Saleh's now, I guess he could be immune to this because he says the same things each and every week. And it's got to be demoralizing when you had to go through this entire season with all the optimism, and then it goes right out the window 4 plays into the season. And he knows the team's eliminated. He knows the team's almost done. But I still think it's important how you talk at the podium. I'm not saying he has to flip a table and go nuts and go crazy on us. But I just don't think he's the right guy to be the coach of the Jets. But ultimately, Aaron Rodgers likes him, so he'll be back next year. And Woody Johnson even already said that. Alrighty, let's get to two more. Here is Jalen Milroe, not happy with the former Alabama offensive coordinator in Bill O'Brien, who once told Jalen Milroe maybe he should change positions. Here is Jalen Milroe.
All my life, even when I was in college, shoot, my own offensive coordinator, Bill O'Brien, told me I shouldn't play quarterback. There's a lot of things I can have motivation on, and that is something I have motivation from.
How you felt when he said that?
How would you feel if I told you you suck?
I would like it.
Okay then, so that's exactly how I felt, you know what I'm saying? So like, biggest thing for me, be true to myself and, you know, stay the same. You know, nothing changed about me. Only thing that changed me about was I had the opportunity and I seized it.
Is there a position he wanted you to play or said you should be this position or that position? Or he just...
He told me a bunch of businesses I could have switched to, but look where I'm at right now. So, you know what I'm saying? So who gets the last laugh?
It's kind of refreshing to actually hear an Alabama player be honest. Remember a few years ago, before they were going up against Oklahoma in one of the college football playoff games, Quinnen Williams is about to trash Kyler Murray and say, like, oh, I don't think he's as good as a quarterback as what people make him out to be. And right as he was about to start to say that, he just froze up and he was like, smiled in Quinton Williams fashion, was like, never mind, I'm good. Because Saban has an antenna in all these guys' heads, I'm convinced. And anytime they're about to say something controversial, you have like this alarm go off. This is Nick Saban. Stop saying what you're about to say. Remember, we are Alabama. We give nothing to those evil pigs in the media. I'm convinced that's what happens. It's like the SpongeBob SquarePants scene when he goes to the driving school and Squidward is basically in an antenna in SpongeBob's hat and he's telling him which way to turn. That's how I envision Nick Saban has this chip in all of the Alabama players' heads. Convinced by that. Let's go to Isaiah Bond. Last one we'll play. So Isaiah Bond was the guy that made the catch that was thrown from Jalen Milroe on that fourth and goal for Alabama up against Auburn. It was a 32-33-yard touchdown, whatever it was. Isaiah Bond said that Alabama can't watch film on their own personal tablets because of Michigan. Listen up.
It's basically like the app we record like film off or practice and stuff like that. And it was like, I guess like looking at other people's like play calls and like their hand signals like the first eight games or something like that. So we wasn't able to like, we was able to watch film with the team, but like personally we can't watch film because like, I don't know, some reason with Michigan stealing signs, but I'm not really too keyed in on that.
Your coaches told you that?
Yeah, our coach told us that probably like a week ago before we was like right before we about to come here, like getting prepared for Michigan.
So like on your individual tablets that you would normally be watching?
Yeah.
Right now you guys are not watching?
Yeah, we're not allowed to.
I don't know. I call cap on that, as the kids would say. Seriously, there was a sign-stealing scandal. Connor Stallions now is able to hack into your tablets too? And then Roman Wilson of Michigan revealed today that their football team has only been able to watch film and group sessions as well. This is the paranoia when you have a minor sign-stealing scandal and it gets turned into a bigger deal. Then all these coaches are all paranoid to begin with. They're like, we can't watch film on our own players' personal tablets. Because Stallions, even though he's off the team, he's probably still getting paid by Harbaugh, and he's going to hack in to our tablet. You know what? Michigan's winning the game. Michigan 23, Alabama 20, because Alabama, they seem scared. They're paranoid. Oh, I can't watch my film on my own personal tablet because the boogeyman. Ooh, Jim Harbaugh and Connor Stallions, they're watching. Ooh, give me a break. That's a joke. Alrighty, that's a news brief. This is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Who should win comeback player of the year? We'll get to that next. Update time first. Here is Dexter Henry. Let's take a look at who's got home field advantage this weekend. Our NCAA football preview is sponsored by Fairfield by Marriott. Fairfield by Marriott is the official hotel partner of the NCAA with over 1,000 locations around the country. You always have the home field advantage. Visit fairfield.marriott.com to book your stay. While it's not your typical home field advantage, Michigan takes on Alabama in the Rose Bowl this weekend, and the Wolverines have played in the Rose Bowl 20 previous times, the second most in history behind only USC, going 8-12 in those games. So, I don't know. That's a little... I like how you stretch that one there, Sam.
I mean, it's bowl game season. How are you supposed to find a home field advantage? So, yeah, I got to find something. So, right, the old Big Ten, Pac-12, Rose Bowl, that was like the legend.
But... objectively here, like I'm reading this and I go, oh, Santa's about to give me a pro Michigan stat here. And it's like, oh, they have the home field advantage. They've been the team that's played in the Rose Bowl the most outside of USC. And then it's like, oh yeah, but they elected to go 8-12 in those games. Like, that doesn't make me feel good about this one. Is that a home field advantage?
But you know what, though? Because they know that field so well, they've been there so often that it's kind of like a home field advantage. Because, you know, Big Ten versus Pac-12, they're always going up against a West Coast team. But now Michigan's going up against Alabama. Michigan knows that field. Michigan knows that area. Michigan knows that stadium. So
I just want to look up something real quick.
Maybe?
No, definitely not. Like, I think Michigan's going to win the game. It has nothing to do with that. Oh, the Rose Bowl may be their second home. But I just want to see one thing. The last time Michigan was in the Rose Bowl, so I'm just going to do a quick search here.
It was a little while ago. They lost like their last three times that they were in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah. So I'm trying to – okay. The first one I see is 2007, where they lost 32-18 to USC, the other team that you use for that stat. I'm just going to do a quick look, make sure that we're right on that. Yeah, we are. In 2008, how old was Blake Corum? How old was Donovan Edwards? These guys don't know the Rose Bowl, but I did find it funny that you saw Nick Saban with Mickey Mouse this week out in the Rose Bowl. Yeah, Jim Harbaugh and Nick Saban, two coaches who I don't necessarily think look cool. With Mickey Mouse, they were both very much out of place.
And don't forget, back in 1986, when Jim Harbaugh led Michigan against number 7 Arizona State and lost to my Sun Devils. Let's go, Sun Devils.
Yeah.
So, in the Rose Bowl.
So Jim Harbaugh, what, just because he sniffed the turf of the Rose Bowl, now he has an advantage? Who knows? Maybe Jim Harbaugh is putting the old school tape of all the old practices of Michigan into the Alabama tablets, and the Alabama programs look at that old film and think that's what's going to happen to Michigan coming up on the first day of 2024. I don't know about you. That tablet story, as Emmett Smith would say, it makes me hot. It makes me mad. Like, you have this guy, Isaiah Bond, just throw out that, oh, we can't watch film because Michigan had access to our like, what? It makes no sense whatsoever.
Now, do you think that Alabama being thrown off a little bit from the normal routine, and we know that football players' routine is very important.
Trouble.
Does it throw, I'm not saying in trouble.
855-212-4CBS.
But does it throw them off just a little bit that these guys aren't able to do their normal routine prepping for this game?
No, because it'd be one thing if the other team wasn't doing it, but Michigan was also saying that this week they have only watched film together as a team as well. And also, I know the preparation doesn't happen for the entirety of the month that they've had off, but there's been too much time to prepare. So even if you had to alter the way that you prepare for a game, you're going to have it figured out when you have a month to get ready for a game. Like, if you're not ready for the game, that's embarrassing. Especially when you have two powerhouse programs, two great programs, and I think, I know Roman Harper, you know, An Alabama honk, all right? I love my guy Roman Harper, but he's an Alabama honk, and he's going to basically say that Michigan's going to get the crap beat out of him. Maybe he's right. Who knows? Wouldn't be the first time I'm wrong, but, you know, I like to think I'm going to be right on this one. I think this is going to be a classic just slugfest. I really do, and I think you're going to see a lot of running here with Milroe. You know Michigan loves to run the football with Corum and Donovan Edwards, and the mobility of J.J. McCarthy extending plays, even if he's not running the ball down the field, but just extending plays, I think they're going to have to use the legs a lot of J.J. McCarthy. So I'm going Michigan in this one, 23-20. But it's not because poor Alabama hasn't been able to watch film on their personal tablets. All righty, we had this conversation about a month ago, I think, Samter. Maybe like a month, month and a half ago, where we asked, does DeMar Hamlin have to win Comeback Player of the Year? And when we were going through the definition of comeback player of the year, I think a lot of people believe it's, okay, you had something horrible happen to you. Injury, obviously, what happened to DeMar Hamlin is an anomaly. But you have something that goes really wrong to you, and you miss football, and then you come back and you play great, or you play well. But that's not always what is the true definition of comeback player of the year. It's a very vague, ambiguous definition. And I remember when Alex Smith was up for it, I forget who the player was, but I was one of the lone people on the radio to say what Alex Smith went through, I don't wish him my worst enemy. And it's remarkable that he's on the field, but there are better players that also went through something that are having by far and away better seasons than Alex Smith. I do ultimately believe that DeMar Hamlin, because of the vagueness of the award and also the fact that the guy almost nearly died on a football field, and he somehow, it's miraculous. Like, I love DeMar Hamlin. The fact that he's able to walk, the fact that he is alive, the fact that he's able to play in some games this year, from being on the air while it happened that night, live on the air, no one said it, but we were all thinking about it. Everyone, when we were watching that game, and it was like we had an hour left in the show, and we had to talk to DeMar Hamlin, but there was no updates. Everyone thought the guy died. And the fact that he is alive, let alone was able to play a little bit this year, is crazy. It's one of the greatest turnarounds that you'll ever see. But just because that happened, I also think, in my opinion, you got to play on the field at a high level. But I don't think that's the way most voters are going to look at it because of how vague the definition of the award is. Like, Tua, even though he went through horrible things, it's not what DeMar Hamlin went through, but Tua has played a lot better football than DeMar Hamlin. Joe Flacco, a lot better football than DeMar Hamlin. You could even make the case maybe Baker Mayfield as well. Now, he didn't get injured last year, but that's also the vagueness of the award. Like, you don't have to get injured. He was just bad last year in Baker Mayfield. So, because of the fact that DeMar Hamlin nearly died and how it's not necessarily tied to performance on the field, it's just persevering and overcoming adversity, I do think DeMar Hamlin ends up winning the award. Now, a month and a half ago, I said I think he will win the award and he should win the award. Now I will say that he will win the award, but if I was voting and I don't have a vote, I would probably consider voting for either Tua or for Joe Flacco.
Do you think that he's going to get the award just like guilt votes? That people will vote for him? Not because they think that he deserves it, but they're afraid. Well, what if I don't? He should get it just because of what happened, but, like, whatever.
So I want to be clear here when we talk about this. Like, what he overcame, we've never seen anything like it. And there's really no criteria for this award other than you have to overcome some horrible adversity or you know, bad play, injury, something like that. My problem is more so, it's not with DeMar Hamlin, like, if he wins the award, I don't think anyone's going to actually have like a legitimate gripe over this. But it's just more so the definition is just so weird where I think there should be something in the definition about play on the field. And ultimately, you're probably right. He is going to win the award. But like, if I voted for DeMar, it wouldn't be because I felt like I was forced to vote for DeMar Hamlin or... I wouldn't use the word guilty. Like, I personally don't see it that way. I just don't understand the side of the argument, if you want to clarify it up real quickly.
No, I'm not saying that I would do that either, but I just wonder if voters would say, you know, maybe I think Tua is more deserving, but, like, I can't not vote for DeMar Hamlin.
Okay.
Like, it would be a bad look for me.
Well, it was such a traumatic experience that we all saw.
Yeah.
Like, I understand if people think that way. The only thing I will say is I think, like, it's remarkable. It's the greatest story that you'll see that he was able to step foot on the field this year, but he didn't really do anything on the field. Now, just him getting on the field is something that is greater than any of us could have imagined. And it's an accomplishment that may make it all superior than all the other things. But I look at this as the way that you're playing on the field. And Tua's been playing great this year. Joe Flacco, for this last month, has been playing great this year. And my only thing is, I wish there would be a clearer definition on how much the on-field success does matter. Because if it doesn't matter and it's just you get on the field, then yeah, obviously, DeMar Hamlin should win the award. All righty, we'll take a break. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. We'll get into a little Texas and Washington next as we preview the other semifinal game coming up on New Year's Day.
When the whole family comes together to watch the game, nobody wants to miss a second of the action to run to the grocery store. With Instacart, you can get all your weekly groceries in as fast as an hour. Less time shopping means more game time. Let's go. Visit instacart.com to get free delivery on your first three orders. Offer valid for a limited time. $10 minimum per order. Additional terms apply.